Hey friends, did you know that HashiCorp's service mesh offering Consul has been deployed to tens of thousands of nodes in a single data center? And now it integrates with discovery features inside and outside of Kubernetes. Jeffrey from HashiCorp is here to show us how that works with Azure Kubernetes Service today on Azure Friday. Hey, I'm Scott and it's Azure Friday. I'm here with Jeffrey from HashiCorp and you're going to show me some amazing stuff and I appreciate you.
Yes, we're running Consul, our service mesh, on AKS, and I'm excited because, you know, we've shown it at a previous Azure Friday episode how to create an AKS cluster with Terraform, our scripted provisioning tool. But Terraform is already installed right in the Cloud Shell, so I can just use this right in the Azure Cloud Shell.
The TF command line, it's already there in the Cloud Shell.
It's already there. So we've already done this elsewhere, but just want to show two snippets that are relevant to running Consul in AKS. Mm-hmm. One is we do want to enable row-based access control so that Helm, the Kubernetes package manager, can do its thing.
Okay.
And then once that's running, we can also configure a service account inside of Kubernetes, and that's called Tiller, which is the server-side component of Helm. And so we'll set up Helm with that, and we have that here.
Okay.
Now that that's running, we're ready to actually install Consul to this cluster. Mm-hmm. So as is often the case, we want to override some values. And so
how big is this cluster? How big does something need to be to install Consul?
Well, thanks to the way that Kubernetes works, it can even just be a single compute node. So you don't need a lot of resources to do this. I built just a three-node cluster here, but it can be pretty small if you want it to be.
Nice.
So we're overriding a few values. I'm giving a name to my data center within Consul. I'm going to say that I want to be able to see the user interface through a load balancer. I want to be able to use Connect, this sidecar that will build my service mesh out of the with the Envoy proxy. Mm-hmm. And then I do want to understand how Kubernetes works to where when resources aren't being used, it will reap those and use those for other things. But I always want my servers to be running, so I'll tell it to not disrupt any of my Consul servers.
Okay.
So with that, I can now install Consul using a Helm chart. So with a single command and my overrides, I can install Consul via Helm. And I like to give it a name, so I've called this Azure just so that I can refer to this.
Okay. And if I understand correctly, because AKS is really Kubernetes, all these HashiCorp things just work. You didn't have to have the Azure version of your HashiCorp favorite tools.
Exactly. When I provision the AKS cluster, I'll do some Azure-specific things, but from there on, it's just Kubernetes.
Nice.
So I've installed that, and now I want to see where's my load balancer so I can look at my administrative user interface. And fortunately, I can get that with kubectl get service, and I've given this name, so Azure Consul UI is going to be my administrative dashboard. And when I'm using Kubernetes, I like to use this double dash watch option because if a load balancer is still spinning up, this will just hang until that's ready. Then it'll show me my external IP address.
I see.
So I've got that, and here is my Consul user interface. So
nice.
I see a list of services, I can see all of my compute nodes, and I can see my key value store for configuration and other kinds of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now we need some services, so let's look at that. So I have a two-service web application, and they want to communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just use standard Kubernetes techniques here. So I'll apply a directory of YAML files that builds this these services for me as pods in Kubernetes, and here it is. So it's a dashboard. And this number is being pulled from a back-end data service.
Okay.
So those are my two services. So now we're actually ready to think about how these services interact and secure this a little bit more. We're already using TLS over the Envoy proxy to make sure that all communication is encrypted. And mm-hmm. that's one thing that Consul does for you. It generates certificates, rotates those certificates, makes sure they're on the proper compute nodes and in the proper pods, but we want to lock this down a little bit more using this principle of least privilege.
Okay, well, see if I understand some context here. So this web application is talking to a backend, And it's doing it, if I understand correctly, in a fairly naive way, because it doesn't want to have to think about doing it right. It just wants to do something. It wants to talk to the back end.
Exactly.
So it may think, if I understand correctly, that it's talking directly to the back end and it gets its thing and it's satisfied, it's happy. But reality isn't the same as what it thinks reality is.
Exactly.
Okay.
And right now, we've just left this fairly open to where any service can talk to any other service. Well, we might not want our calendaring service to be able to talk to our fraud detection service, so let's specify which services should be allowed to talk to each other's service.
That makes sense.
And there are many ways we can do that through the API or through this web user interface. So,
and isn't one of the important things about this entire ecosystem is that my application shouldn't care about the things you're about to do to lock things down, right? You're not going to make application code changes.
Exactly. In fact, I wrote these applications using Go a year ago before I even thought about putting them into Kubernetes. I didn't have to even recompile.
So even better, they don't even know where they are living. They're in the
exactly.
matrix.
Exactly. Yep.
That's awesome.
So we'll start with a rule, an intention here, which is just a rule about how services should be able to interact, and we'll just lock this down. So no service is allowed to talk to any other service. And right away, after a few seconds, the few seconds is not a feature of console. It's very fast. It's more of my application that
sure.
checks every few
yeah.
seconds. And as we can see now, it can't reach that back-end data service, and there's nothing to display. So we've locked that down.
Mm.
But now we want to enable it, so I'll create another intention that says my dashboard service should be able to talk to my counting service, and I will go ahead and allow that. And very quickly, now we're connected again, but with additional control over how our services are allowed to interact.
How are those rules reconciled? Are they in order? Is there a union that is produced in some way?
Great question. As we can see here, they have a precedence, so we know that more specific rules should apply differently than the more general rules. And so there is an ordering, and you can see it right here in the web user interface.
Very cool. That makes sense. It's intuitive. So when the application, the counting application, is talking to that back end, is it just going like http://counting service or counting database? Does it think it's talking to a local intranet?
Well, that's one thing that we've done to make this as easy as possible is that we'll manage these proxies for you, but the applications just talk to localhost on a port that you configure, and then we handle the rest of discovering the service that you want to connect to and what IP address it's running on, what port, that type of thing. So your application just talks to localhost.
Really? That's interesting. So I've seen different services. I've heard different ways to do it. I've seen some Kubernetes apps where they have http://db, and I've seen other ones where they map it to a port. Why would I pick one versus the other, and what kind of benefits would I get when I use console?
Well, we know that in today's modern infrastructure, resources are being spun up and shut down all the time, so we don't want you to have to specify IP addresses and have to manage that. Let us do that for you. So console allows you just to think of these services by their name, and then we'll do the rest of discovering where they are, the healthy ones, which ones are ready to serve the kind of data that you want to get. So that's a way that we try to make a really good user interface for the DevOps professional who's building their infrastructure around this.
Now, you point out that we think about those services by name. Do we think about them by name at only the DevOps level, or might I actually console aware or console enable my app? Like, you made a comment that your Go apps don't know where they're living. They're really kind of ignorant. Is there value in them becoming more, knowing about what's outside of their scope, or is it important for them to be ignorant?
Well, there's two ways you can do it. We do connect to the DNS services built into Kubernetes. So if you want to use the ways that Kubernetes can find other services, you can use that. Console works together with those. Or console runs its own DNS on a top-level .console domain. So you could say counting.service.console and use that to then find the available healthy resources serving the counting service.
That's really interesting. That implies that you are prescriptive and opinionated, but not so much that you don't let me do what I want to do.
Exactly. We want to suggest a workflow, but also enable you to plug into legacy, Greenfield, or any other applications that you want to write.
Right. And I like that your application, even though it was only a year ago, you could call it a legacy application because you just enabled it without telling it about its environment. You just brought it in, and now it could potentially scale.
Exactly. And it was written to be configurable through some environment variables, so I was able to control the pre-compiled application just by sending in a localhost and a port that I wanted to talk to, and then from there, it was just up to the proxy to find that service.
Cool. No code changes. Everything just worked.
No code changes.
So Consul is a service mesh in that you could have dozens, hundreds, thousands of potential microservices. I've seen people go a little crazy with microservices, almost like they're creating an old DCOM application from 20 years ago where every single thing is a service. How do you decide what your granularity is and what's too far?
We've seen that, and we want to give you the ability to decide how your architecture runs, but for Consul to be as flexible as it needs to be. So we have these top-level service names like counting or fraud detection, and then we also allow you to tag those services. So you could tag them by version number or a sub-feature. Maybe you're doing some kind of feature flags. Mm. So we'll give you the ability to use either tags or service names, and then it's up to you how you want to split up those services.
You mentioned versioning, which is great. That's actually my next question. Like, if you were going to do this, would you version this by running two versions of your counting service, or would you teach the counting service about managing versions, and then you'd have one instance, and it would be smart? Ultimately, Consul doesn't care.
Consul doesn't care. Some people like feature flags to where a single binary is running two different features based on the audience, or you can spin up a whole new compute resource or a Kubernetes pod that's running a separate version, and then we'll allow you either to just say, give me all the healthy services for the counting service, or only the counting services that have my particular version tag.
Fantastic. Well, this is great. Thanks for sharing with me. I am learning all about the stuff that I can bring in from HashiCorp and the Kubernetes ecosystem, like Consul, and I can run it on Azure. I'm learning all about it today on Azure Friday.